Welcome to the Wheelbarrow Profits Podcast, where you get multifamily investing made real. Learn from top players in the real estate investment world as they share their secrets with you and discover proven strategies on apartment investing that actually work. To learn more about Wheelbarrow Profits, visit jakeandgino.com, your one-stop shop for everything multifamily. Now to your hosts, Jake and Gino.
Hello, everybody. This is Jake Stenziano, host of the Wheelbarrow Profits Podcast, here with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach, the chef, the father of six, the best-selling author, the G-Daddy, Gino Barbo. Gino, how's it going?
Mr. Stenziano, Brosif. I'm doing good. How are you?
Dude, I'm always making it happen. You ready to start that lawnmower today?
I am.
All right. Without further ado, let's give a shout-out to the sponsor then, Gino.
Jake, quick question for you. Do you need a great property management software for your rental portfolio? We all do, right? PropertyZar is a web-based property management software designed for portfolios of all sizes. PropertyZar includes all the features of the leading software vendors at price that is affordable for even the smaller portfolios. You know, Jake, whether you manage 10 units, 950 units like us, or 10,000 units, PropertyZar's base entry point is affordable for everybody. PropertyZar comes with a complete accounting system in addition to calculating your cap rate and your cash-on-cash return. With PropertyZar, you can track your assets, you can screen tenants, accept online payments, conduct on-site inspections, online applications. The list goes on and on, Jake. Jake, where were these guys 5 years ago when we started, huh? We were using this stupid QuickBooks over here. Where was
bad idea?
This is my pain point. This is what all investors' pain points is, right? Tenants can even submit work orders along with pictures via the mobile app. Schedule appointments and set unlimited reminders to all attendees, man. PropertyZar is one of the most user-friendly applications on the market. But just don't take our word for it, guys. Try it for free. Find out why PropertyZar is quickly becoming the property management solution for portfolios of all sizes. And right now, Jake, listen up. Our listeners can get a free trial. That F-R-E-E is Jake Stenziano's favorite word. Free trial, that's right. And no credit card required. Just go to propertyzar.com/Gino. Show the love, Jake. They're showing Gino the love. That is propertyzar.com/Gino.
And I'm going to let everybody into a little secret here why I love my G-Daddy over here. It's because he can read. And that's right, Gino. You can read. And you can
Reading is fundamental, bro. I passed high school English. That's all I gotta say, right? Riff.
All right, let's get into this. Today's guest is Bruce Peterson. Bruce is a serial syndicator of large multifamily properties throughout Central Texas. He was awarded the Austin Apartment Association Independent Rental Owner of the Year in 2016 and the National Apartment Association's Independent Rental of the Year in 2017. Knocking him out, Bruce. He targets stabilized properties where he can buy a cash flowing asset and drive value through improved operations. He is able to do this by implementing his proven systems and deploying his experienced staff to replicate his business model across new acquisitions. I'm pumped about this one. This sounds good. I'm ready to learn. I'm going to sit here and take some notes. So without further ado, Bruce, welcome to the show.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me. This is going to be great.
This is already great. We got G Daddy just cranking it out there with the ads in the beginning. We're bringing the pain already.
Even so Jake did a little riff today. A little reading is fundamental. You got Jake pushing it out. Here we go, my friends.
Yeah, let's go. So tell us about how you got started, and then I think we're going to talk a lot about systems today. At least I hope, because it sounds like you're a systems guy, and I love that. So tell us how you got started out.
All right, so I'm an old retail guy. Actually, I was in retail for 18 years. Before that, I was a stockbroker in the early 90s. But coming out of retail, well, being in retail, I hit a wall in 2007, the end of 2007, working 90 to 110 hour weeks. I just couldn't do it anymore. So I just kind of gave my keys back to my boss and said, dude, I'm out. I just can't do it. I went trying to find myself by traveling the eastern half of the US in a rental car for a month to a month and a half in 2008. And then came back and thought, okay, I'm 43 years old. I got no job. I was kind of quasi-retired. And I thought, I got to figure something out to do with the rest of my life. No wife, no kids, no family of any kind. Didn't even have a damn dog. So I thought, all right, what am I going to do now? So I just started trying to educate myself in real estate and learned how to invest in apartment complexes. And apartment complexes are all I've ever done. I've syndicated every deal I've ever done. Started with a 48 unit back in 2012. And, you know, it's just been the best thing I've ever done, the most profitable and the most rewarding by a landslide.
So why real estate?
Well, you know, you always hear real estate, you know, everybody talks about real estate. That's where, you know, the majority of the millionaires in the nation come from. They either got it there or they are currently there. So I thought there's got to be something to this. I don't know anything about it. And like I said, I just try to find people that could teach me how to do it. And I try to find a mentor. That was really, really hard because everybody wanted to talk to me about, you know, selling houses. I'm like, nah, that's not what I want. I want to invest in real estate. But I did finally find a group that taught me how to do it. And, you know, I've never looked back.
But Bruce, more specifically, why real estate for you? What was the burning desire for you? Because like the why has to be strong enough for you to become successful. You obviously became super successful. So what was your true why to get into the real estate space? Because you're really successful in retail, but that burned you out.
Right. So my real why, just to be honest, it was very shallow. I just wanted to make a lot of money. And I honestly thought I was going to get into real estate and buy 2 to 4 homes, pay them off, and then live on the cash flow for the rest of my life. I lived very, very, very way below my means back then. I was living on $2,000 a month. So it wasn't going to take a lot for me to replace that, my expenses, to cover my expenses. But then I got into it and I started talking to people about apartment complexes. And I was like, oh my God, this is a hell of a lot bigger than I thought it was. So I just I didn't go into single family, went straight to multifamily, made 300% on my first property and thought, holy crap, I found it. I was good as a stockbroker. I made good money in retail. Nothing compares to this. So, you know, the long answer here is it's kind of shallow. First of all, I was looking for something to do, and that's really what it was. I was going to start some kind of business, but I keep hearing about real estate. So I thought, well, let me give it a shot. It sounds like it's real. Lots of people make lots of money in it. Let me figure out how to do it.
So let's talk about your stock picking days. You like the little meltdown that's been going on the last week, right? This is why we love real estate. It's control, baby. It's not lose 10% in 3 hours and you made 10% over the last 6 years and you lose it in 3 hours and you have no control. What are your thoughts about the stock market now as someone being in the market 20 years ago? And I know it's a monumental shift because back then we were using value line. I'm in the same mantra as you are. I'd get value line. I'd have my information. I'd be able to make a judgment. Nowadays, it's all algorithms. So let's talk a little bit about stocks before we dive into your deals.
All right. So stocks, you know, I got paid pretty well, but I was a used car salesman pitching stock. That's all it really was. I was the guy that you saw on Wall Street, the Wolf of Wall Street. That was me. I wasn't that nuts and out of control. I wasn't doing drugs, but my God, it was crazy. I did it for a year and a half and I did pretty well, but it taught me how to invest in the stock market. I still own 2 stocks. I still own Tesla and Netflix, and I hope to never sell them. I'm a long-term buy and hold guy. So I don't trade. I've traded before. I've bought options before. Didn't work very well. It took way too much of my time. So I like to find brilliant people to invest in. Reed Hastings, Elon Musk, Steve Jobs, Jeff Bezos, those guys. Invest in those people and just let my money run. So I don't try to time anything anymore. If I lose 10% today, 20% tomorrow, I'm still going to hang on to it because long term, the trajectory will be up. But even that's going to return me 10 to 15, maybe 20% a year. And real estate, I'm going to make 20 to 40% a year. And the tax benefits in this industry are stupid. So yeah, this is where 95% of my money sits.
Well, I'm so glad I asked that question. 2 things that jump out at me, Jake. Number one, he talks about people. So he's a syndicator. It's the same thing with syndication. You talk about sponsors. You invest in the sponsor. You're investing in Bruce when you're doing a deal. He's investing in the company itself. Most people just pick stocks because they like the company. Look who's running the company. Look who's running the syndication. You're not doing just the deal itself. You're doing the sponsor, more importantly, the deal. And number two, long-term. Bruce is not going into fixing and flipping. He's not going into getting in and getting out. So his mindset shifted from the stock portfolio into the real estate portfolio. And I think that's what the true benefits to real estate investing are, that those long-term principal pay down, cost segregation, cash flow, all that is embedded in real estate so much more than stock. So I'm glad you answered that question. That was great. That was excellent.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's what it's all about. Again, long-term. I'm a buy and hold. Look, I'll be honest with you. I'd like to find some 2-3 year flips. That's what a flip is in multifamily. They're just not out there, right? Most of them, well, in my neighborhood, right? In my neck of the woods, they've all been picked over, bought, rehabbed, flipped back out of the market. So if I could triple my investors' money every year and a half to 2 years, well, hell, I still want to do that. Don't get me wrong. But those don't present themselves. So I'm really happy getting my investors a 7 to 10% return annually. That's tax deferred, if not just outright tax free. Now, my CPA wife cringes when I say tax free. but you know, it is what it is.
That's right.
Don't worry about her, Bruce. Us better are you. We're doing it, man. She's don't worry about
city
her.
Right now. I don't have to worry about it.
Listen, let's talk about that first deal. Cause everyone says to me, oh, I don't have the money to get in the room multifamily. I don't know how to syndicate. How did you find the deal? Number one. And number two, how did you syndicate? Did you raise the money yourself? Let's talk about those steps, because that's going to be really crucial for people listening to it. They're going to get a lot of value out of this question.
All right. So first of all, how did I find it? It was on LoopNet property. Honest to God, it was. And I went and looked at it and decided this is exactly what I'm looking for. I had a parameter. I had parameters for my first property. I wanted 40 to 60 units because I didn't want to manage it myself. I knew roughly the neighborhoods that I wanted to look for in my city. And I knew, you know, roughly what age, you know, from my education, I knew these things. I knew what I was looking for. I found this property, went, looked at it, liked it, made an offer, and got it under contract.
What did you like about it?
I liked it was built in the 80s, right? I liked that it was 48 units. Again, I can afford staff now, part-time outside and a part-time inside person. Pitched roof, the paint looked to be in good shape. Overall, it was a good asset. It was in good shape. I didn't have to do a lot of rehab to it on the front end. And we thought we were going to make, you know, 10 to 12% a year until we decided to sell. And the plan was to sell in 5 years.
Okay. So let's talk about the numbers. Do you remember what you bought it at as far as cap rates, as far as cash on cash returns?
I don't remember the cap rate exactly on current at that time, but I paid $1.625 million for it. I raised $575,000. From 14 and well, I raised 440,000 because I brought in 20% of the deal myself. So I raised just a little under $450,000 to get the deal. Like I said, 14 investors. I had investors involved anywhere from $10,000 to $100,000 with me. And where I found those guys, I get this all the time. Well, I don't know how to find money. Go out and find it. It's out there. You know, talk to people. Let people know what you're doing. There are other people trying to do what you're doing. Go to the real estate clubs, join groups like yours. I started my own meetup before I even knew what the hell a meetup was. It was back in 2011, and it was me and one other guy. And we got together every Wednesday just to compare notes on what we had each learned throughout the previous week. And every time we would go to one of the real estate clubs or, you know, one of the other meetups or something, we would tell people, you know, hey, we're meeting every other Wednesday or every Wednesday at that point at a Starbucks. If you want to come shoot the shit with us and talk about real estate, we're all trying to learn together. So that list kept growing and growing and growing. And today it's still going and it's about 300 people strong. But that's where all of my guys came from on my first deal. Everyone.
So how did you structure the part? Was it a GPLP structure? How did that go?
Basically, yeah, I was a syndicator. So I was a decision maker on every front. They were silent. They did not want to be part of it. They wanted the returns, but they all had their own jobs. They had their own families. They were traveling. Some of them, they didn't want to deal with the day-to-day operations. So yeah, basically I was the GP and I had 14 LPs. Now at that time I had no experience. I had no job. And I wanted to buy a multi-million dollar asset. So I had to come in with two investors with me, well, two signers with me on this bank loan. Because while the underwriting process, the approval process with the bank is about 80% on the property itself, does it generate enough profit to carry the loan? But there's also a small piece, they're gonna look at you. They wanna make sure if, you know, it all goes to hell, could you carry it for a little while at least? I didn't have W-2 income, so that scared the bank. So I brought two guys in that made six figures, and they each agreed to sign for me on the loan for a small chunk of the equity above what they invested. But yeah, that's how we got it done.
So was this a non-recourse loan, or was it an agency loan or a community bank?
It was Regency. I mean, Regency. It was recourse. And really, I used a mortgage broker on my first deal because I didn't know what I was doing. And this mortgage broker had connections to a single location bank right outside of Chicago. And I would have never found them, but they agreed to lend money to me, 30-year amortization. Ooh, my prepayment was a 320, and I got a 4.89% loan back in 2012. But it was recourse.
That's great though, that's awesome.
30-year AM on a community bank is awesome.
Especially for your first deal, bro. Yeah. So before we go, what happened to the deal? How did you do property management? What did you do with the property management aspect of it?
Okay, so my first deal, I have no experience. The bank goes, hey, we'll give you money. We like the asset. We trust you enough, right? But you've never done this. You have no experience, no track record. So we're going to insist you hire a third-party management company. Like, deal. I just want the deal. So I did that. I had a third-party management company that I inherited when I bought it. I kept them on board for 6 months, and then I let them go. And I've self-managed ever since.
Oh, great. So you self-manage your entire portfolio right now?
Absolutely. I have a management company, a construction company, an asset management company. Yeah, I do everything in-house. I raise all of my own money. I've never used anybody else as part of my GP to help me raise money. I do all of it myself.
Hey, Jake, we got an IMA here, right? I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I like that.
I'm telling you, Gina, we got a brother from another mother going right now.
Jake, I'm afraid he's going to whip out a chainsaw from back over there and start using the chainsaw back there. That's the.
I'm about to pick this up and show you the ones that are about to die here in a minute. But real quick, though,
on that IMA disease, right? So I do all of that, yes, but it's because I have corporate staff. I have people doing the day-to-day operations, setting up all the back office, paying all the bills, doing all the bookkeeping.
IMA comes before all that. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to do everything. Comes before you hire people because you don't know any better. And that's what we went through. We do the same thing. We have our own property management, asset management, all that. But in the beginning, it was just like me and Gino. Hey, we can do it all. And then it was like, dude, what are we doing? Like, Bruce, what the hell? We're like bookkeeping. I'm the worst bookkeeper ever. And I did it for a year.
Bruce, for the first year, he was down in Tennessee. He was sending me up reports by mail. I was getting these packages like this. I was giving it to my bookkeeper up in New York.
God.
I'm quick was going back and forth and finally said to ourselves, hold on a second. And we only had like 60 units. When we hit the 200 unit threshold, we looked at ourselves. And we said, what in God's name?
What the hell are we doing?
You know, so that's. It gets
there's got to be a better way, and there's a much better way. Yeah. Hire brilliant people, put them all around you, and now you go make the real money by sourcing additional deals.
That's right. So on this 48-unit deal, what did you end up doing? Did you end up selling, refining?
We sold after 2 years and 4 months. We could have refined and kept it, but, you know, a 48-unit property is not easy to run. It's actually a lot harder to run than my 300-unit property. So we decided after 2 years and 4 months, we sold it. We made a 300% return and we moved on to bigger and better things. And in fact, that first deal put the profit check that I got, or the check I got at closing, was $289,000 on $115,000 investment, right? Now we had cash flow figured in there too to make up the balance of that 300% return. But that first deal gave me the capital to invest in the next two syndications I did. So really that first deal turned into three. So it was time to sell and move on to bigger and better things.
On that first deal, did you buy anything after that, or did you sell that and then buy your next asset? How was the
trade? I sold, and then I took a hiatus because I started teaching other people how to do what I had learned to do. And so I got sidetracked. I did that. I mean, I enjoyed what I was doing, but I did get sidetracked. So I kind of neglected my own portfolio for about 2 years. And then I came back. And in the next 18 months, when I came back into it at the end of 2015, I closed four deals for 860 units in 18 months.
Wow.
Boom shakalaka.
What market are you investing in primarily?
All Central Texas.
And is that because you're in that market or is in your backyard? Or what do you like about the market?
I live in Austin, Texas, and it's one of the best markets in the nation. Austin is not really boom and bust, but it has been a little more heated. San Antonio, I really like too, because it's a little more steady. You know, you're not going to have a huge ramp up in prices and then, you know, a pullback. It kind of chugs along, going up 3-5% a year. And that's great. So I love these areas and I plan on going national, you know, probably in the next year or two. But right now I can source enough deals for my investors in Central Texas. I haven't had to leave.
So sourcing deals, how are you coming along your deals right now?
All of them are publicly listed deals. I've only gotten one pocket deal in my life, and that's it. Now, I got that deal, but everything else I've ever bought was just something that I found by basically going to your brokerage's websites, getting on their free email list, setting up my parameters for their search for me, and then they just start filling my inbox. And I look for the ones that make sense. I schedule a tour, go out and walk them. If I like them, I make an offer and start going.
What are your buy parameters? What are you looking for as far as returns and rates, cap rates, and all that?
Again, I'd like to find some deep value-add properties if I could, but they're not really that available in my market. So I'm just looking for anything I can return 7-8% first year from my investors. And then, of course, we'll scale profitability from there. But that's what they're expecting. So I just got to go out and source those deals. For the most part, they're going to be stabilized assets that I'll come in. I will, you know, tighten up the operations, run things a little more profitably. I know how to institute all kinds of different revenue streams that people are willing to pay for that a lot of the previous owners haven't thought about. So we still drive value out of these stabilized assets. We're just not buying deep value add properties.
So now that you're syndicating and you've been syndicating for a few years, would you mind sharing with me, I guess, and the listeners, how do you structure your syndications? Do you charge acquisition fees, asset management fees, 70-30 splits, 80-20 splits? How do you do your syndications? Because I'm sure that you have tons of investors out there with excess cash, so you could be a little bit more picky and choosy right now.
Right. So I do it differently than most. I'm weird, I guess, in a lot of ways that, like I said, I raise all my own capital, but the deal structure is it's anywhere from an 80-20 split to a 70-30 split. Now, if the deal requires it to get the return to the investors that I need, I've gone as low as 85-15. I never give a preferred return. I've never once given a preferred return. And the reason for that is because I don't have those fees. I have no waterfall. I have no acquisition fee. I have no disposition fee. So we all share everything equally as we go on a pro rata basis because I keep it so simple. And I don't nail it. I'm buying $20 to $25 million assets. If I have a 4% acquisition fee, which some of them do, they'll have 2 to 4%. So if I have a 4% acquisition fee, that's $1 million that I don't tax my investors with in a fee on the front end. So now I haven't had to give a preferred return because I'm saving them crap tons of money on the front end. But that's the way I structure it.
I like that. I always want to do it that way. We haven't syndicated yet. We've got everything in house and we're going to do our first syndication this year. I keep saying that because I know we're going to do it. If I keep saying it, it's going to happen, right, Jake? and I want to do that. This whole waterfall, this whole preferred rate of return, and I want to be 70-30. We're all equal. Whatever happens, we share in it, and it'll make me work harder. Disposition, and then you got the refinance fee, and you got this fee. And I love the model. And what do your investors say about it? Do they balk at it?
I love it. I've never had any pushback on it at all because I explained it to them. You know, we've got a little document that we send out to say, look, this is why we do what we do for simplicity. But also on every deal that we do, we have at least two webinars. One right when we get it under contract and then what about a month from close? But I talk to them all along the way about this is what we're doing, this is how it's structured, and this is what that structure means to you as the end user. But, you know, guys, we're trying to keep it as simple as I can. I don't want to convolute everything with all these fees, all these waterfalls, because their eyes start to glaze over. It might be a deal that would make them 100% in 3 days, but if I overcomplicate the shit out of it, they're just going to walk away. So I'm going to try to get it as, you know, idiot-proof and as dumbed down as I can.
You mentioned revenue streams a minute ago. Okay. You come in. What are you talking there? You talking RUBS? You talking trash valet? What are your favorites?
Well, RUBS, you know, that's the low-hanging fruit. Everybody knows to do that. If your market will support it, always do that if it's not already in place when you take over. The stuff I'm buying it from, you know, billion-dollar companies that really know what they're doing. So all that stuff's already implemented. But we have little bitty things, and all these little bitty things add up. You know, if I go into an area that doesn't have covered parking, I put it in. My covered parking ROI is 50%. Why am I not going to do that? I put in 120, no, on this last property, I put in 100 spaces and my value goes up on an annual, based on annual NOI increase, my value goes up by $500,000. So that makes all the sense in the world. Small things. We've got something called Credit Builder in our software, our property management software, that they will help our tenants repair their credits for, I think it's $5.99 a month. They report to the credit reporting agencies to help them bulk up their credit and to show the world that's monitoring their credit, look, this is the stuff that I'm doing to make my credit better. So it's a small $5.99 fee, and we might only get 20% of our property. But again, for every incremental dollar I add in income without a matching increase in expenses, my property value increases by $15 to $17. So it's a 15 to 17 to 1 multiple. That's ridiculous, right? So we also have renter's insurance, just all kinds of little things like that. And a lot of times what we'll do is we will actually send out a poll to the residents. Give us some of your ideas. What would you like to see us provide for you? And so they come in with all these ideas, and what we'll usually do is say, look, the top two or three choices we will actually implement for you. And those people, we will give you a $50 gift card. We'll give you $100 off your next month's rent, whatever. So now they're bought in, right? They get to take part in their community. They know we're listening. We're going to respond to what they're requesting. But now the funny thing is, you know, now I get to make money on their suggestions. So they suggest it, I provide it, and I make money on it. So really, it's kind of a kumbaya thing, right? They love it. We love it. It works.
Don't want to put you on the spot, but can you think of one of those really one of those suggestions?
Well, one of them honestly was covered parking. You know, they're like, look, I've seen other properties, none of them in this neighborhood, Mr. and Mrs. Owner, actually they're communicated with my on-site manager. But a place I lived, you know, in another part of the city, I had covered parking. It's 105 to 110 degrees in Austin in the summer. And we had a freak hailstorm in San Antonio a year and a half ago. Well, they wanted that. We thought, okay, let's do a feasibility on it. Let's see if it makes sense. And I was like, oh my God, yeah, it makes sense. So yeah, so that was a huge moneymaker for us. And it came because somebody said, please give it to me. I was like, absolutely, we'll do that.
That was cool. Good.
No, I was just going to say, what about, have you guys ever looked at getting supplies from China to save on your supply costs? Because it's something that Gino and I are going back and forth on right now. And I've heard some people even saying up to 70%. Discounts on this stuff. Have you looked into that at all?
I haven't, because I can hit the profitability that I need to without, again, in my brain, overcomplicating things. So I've got a friend that started his own import company.
Yeah.
That's his own standalone business. It's a multi-million dollar business. So he's gone out and sourced the stuff. He boats it all over, puts it in his massive warehouse. But now he actually sells to other syndicators also, other owners. So he's created a whole standalone business. I don't really want to go into all that headache. Now, I will buy from him. But I don't want to look at trying to source my own materials. Maybe someday when I've got 10,000 units, because that's where I'm headed, it'll make sense. Right now, I have a better use of my time and my staff's time than trying to. Now, it sounds like it could be a substantial savings.
I was running some numbers on it, and the numbers that you were just talking about, I think this could actually blow those away. And that's why I'm saying that, because if you look at your supply costs on your income statement and you're saying, right, if you can cut that by 70%, that's real money now. So, I mean, that's something that I'm looking at very closely. It might be a year before we get there, but I definitely have that for the future. I think that could be some serious stuff there.
You figure that out, dude. Let me know.
It's coming, right? It's coming. So we'll keep you posted.
So Bruce, I wanted to get back to the syndication part about it. When you buy the asset, what are you underwriting? You're underwriting for 5 to 7 years. Are you underwriting to refi the property, hold it? Are you refining to sell it? What's your strategy on your acquisition?
Right now, my typical projected hold time is 5 to 7 years. But you know, I tell my investors, look, I want to look at it every single year. And if the market dramatically changes in a way that I think I need to sell sooner, I'm only going to do what's in the best health of the property and of the investment. But my typical hold guidelines are 5 to 7 years. We hope to do a cash out REIT. Well, it's called a supplemental loan in the agency debt world, but we're hoping to take out more loan dollars anyways in about 2 to 3 years. So I modeled that in. If it warrants it, a lot of times I'll buy a stabilized asset and I'll just be upfront with my investor, say, look, this is not a good candidate for a cash out refi or a supplemental during the whole process, because there's not a lot of value add opportunity here and we're paying retail for it. We're going to make a good 7 to 10. And as we hold it longer, a 12% annualized return. When we sell it, we're not going to have a big back end. So, you know, I tell them, look, this probably won't, you know, qualify for any of that stuff, but we're going to try. Because a lot of times when we go in with a stabilized asset, we can still tighten up the operation enough to drive enough value that we can still do a supplemental loan.
And Bruce, when you do refi out the people, what do you do with the splits? Do you give them all their money back and change the splits, or do you continue to keep it 70-70 them, 30 you, or 80-20? How do you do it on the back end?
So typically what we've done is anytime there's a capital event outside of the disposition or the sale of the property, we will share it, you know, the 80-20, 70-30. Whatever that happens to be in that deal. Now on the back end, when we go sell, what I do is I make the investors whole. So if I gave them a supplemental loan proceed check of say $50,000, 3 years in, and they invested 100, right? So now I owe them $50,000 of their original capital back. So on that sale profit, I zero out their capital account. So I give them their $50,000 to make them whole. And now we split that 70-30 or 80-20 above that number.
Wow, so you're generous. You're
keeping it simple.
Yeah, yeah. You're even giving them the 70-30. A lot of these guys are, I wouldn't say pigs, but they do it because they can. They'll take 50-50 on the back end, and that's where they get their big score. Dollar. Yeah, yep. And I'm a little – that rubs me the wrong way sometimes with syndicators because I know that's the game, and sometimes it bothers me because you're putting all this thing and you're worrying about down the road and you're just looking at the exit and could do not 50-50. So sometimes that really irks me. But the guys we've had on the show, Jake, the last few guys, they've really gone 70-30. I'm impressed with that. That's really cool. That's a great way – that's a testament, right? That's why you got investors that are lining up and wanting to do deals with you, correct?
Right, because now if you think about it, if I sell tomorrow and I make $1 million profit, but I'm going to split that 70-30, there's a chance they're not going to get even their original capital back, right? Mm-hmm. So I need to make sure that they get their original capital back, and then I start taking my split because I want them to be whole. And then
I don't think there's any other way to do it. You know, I think that's the only way to do it ethically, really. I mean, I know, you know, there may be some other ways out there, but I think that's the way people should be doing it.
I agree.
Yeah.
Wow. So let me ask you, I guess, the last question before we get into the lightning round. I mean, what's your best tip for people out there trying to get into syndication and trying to get into apartment investing?
Just plug in your local environment, your local scene. I mean, it's that simple, honestly, you know, but you can't be afraid. You can't overanalyze things. I was talking to a guy the other day and I just looked him dead in his eye because he's trying to figure out how I do what I do, how to do what I do. And I said, look, I can tell. I've known you for 15 minutes now, but I can tell you're overly cautious. You're an extreme B personality. You've got an engineer's brain and you are going to lock yourself up so bad that you won't be able to move. So you have got to trust your knowledge, your capabilities, and you just got to move. But, you know, to really get into it though, yeah, go plug into the local real estate investment clubs, join a group like yours, surround yourself with like-minded people that are trying to do what you're trying to do. Because most of the people that are trying to do what you're trying to do, their version of that is they're just trying to find somebody like you to give their money to, because they don't want to deal with the dead guy I found in a pool, the property manager up the street that hung herself the other day. They don't want to deal with that crap, you know? So, you know, just get plugged in and make yourself available. And if you can, if you have the ability, personality-wise, to start your own meetup, start your own meetup, you know? Start making yourself kind of the central focus in your little circle of people.
Bruce, so let me touch on that real quick, Jake. Yeah, I think what you say is all spot on. And if you're not the type to go out there and do it and be a personality, listen, I wasn't either. I couldn't get in front of a camera 2 years ago. Now I host a podcast. Now I'm on stage. So you have to get out of your comfort zone. Push yourself. Right. You only live freaking once. If you want to do this, this is what you have to do. It's all about your network. Your net worth is all about your network. And if you can't grasp that concept, then do the 9-to-5 and be happy with that. If not, you're going to have to go out there and talk to people and present to them the opportunity. That's the only way you're going to grow in this world.
Now, right. I think what Bruce said resonated with me. It's the paralysis by analysis, right? These guys just keep chasing their tails because they're afraid to commit or pull the trigger, but they're looking at everything, analyzing it. Sometimes you just got to jump in, man. Get on the diving board, do that cannonball, and that's it. Just go. Just do it. Come on.
Right. My analogy for people is, look, you know, when I did it my first time, I remember the day before I closed,
when
I called.
You did it your first time. You're like 16?
What's that?
You're 16 when you did it your first time? Yeah. No, you're talking about real estate.
I stole house. that was wrong. But anyway, so I called the person that was kind of leading me through the process the first time. I said, look, this is suddenly getting real. We close tomorrow.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm doing. But I did it anyways because I had faith in what I was doing. So you got to push through that fear. But my analogy is, look, I'm about to step off a cliff. And I pray to God what's down there is soft. I don't know what. I hope I'm going to land on a pillow. I don't know what it is, but I have enough faith. I know how to do what I need to do. I've been successful in everything I've ever done. So, you know, I was talking to one of my old employees the other day, and she said, I got to change something. I was like, what are you talking about? I'm not happy with where I am. I'm really good at what I do, but I, you know, I don't know what else is out there. There's got to be something else out there. All I know is what I know, and I'm good at it, but I'm not getting anywhere. So I coached her through that for a little while, and I finally looked at her. I said, look, how bad do you want this? Because she was like, yeah, you're right, I should. Because I said, you got to read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Richest Man of Babylon. You got to change your mindset. And she's like, well, yeah, I know. You're absolutely right. I said, okay, here you go again. Looked her dead in her eyeball, and I said, look, I don't believe you're going to do it.
Mm-mm. Not with I know and I should.
Yeah, I don't believe you're going to do it at all.
Should deliver something.
I said, are you happy where you are? I like my job, but no, I'm trying to provide a better life for my kids and leave something for my kids when I go. Like, okay, then what do you need to do? I need to change something. Okay, how badly do you want it? Now, you might be giving me lip service. Oh, I want it, but you really don't. And if that's the case, that's okay. But if you want it, get off your ass, go get it. I told her, look, the world is a pile of freaking money and you can have every bit of it you want. But what are you willing to do to go get it? Yep. Get off your ass, work, you know, Gary Vaynerchuk, work on your business from 8 o'clock at night to 2 a.m. Go make it happen.
Well,
he
I think
make
she's
it
not.
Happen. He said, make it happen. And he mentioned the richest man in Babylon. I think I'm in love right now.
Oh, ow! I take it back.
My man Bruce over here. I love it.
Jake, the thing is.
There's a chainsaw. Let's go.
What he's describing is somebody that's not uncomfortable enough right now. She's a little uncomfortable. She's not that uncomfortable. She's not. She doesn't have that much.
Doesn't have the drive. Doesn't have the drive.
Wait 5 years from now when her kids are 14, 15, and she's really pissed off. That's when it's going to happen. That's what happened to me. I wasn't uncomfortable enough. When I really got uncomfortable and I was really annoyed, I said, let me step it up. And as far as the analogy you guys made to people having the analysis paralysis, I'm an immigrant, had immigrant parents. Fortunately for me, they weren't college educated. So they didn't know what risks they were taking when they started a business. I've got Italian guys who bought apartments in the Bronx back 40 years ago. They didn't know what the hell they were doing, but they knew they had to do something, right? So they didn't know the risk. They weren't afraid. If they failed, what the hell? They came from nothing anyway, right? That's what stops a lot of Americans now, because they don't want to take the risk because they know, or they put this plant in this imaginary fear that if I fail, no one's going to love me. I'm going to lose my money. That's a load of crap. These guys succeeded, not because of what they knew, because of what they didn't know sometimes.
Yeah, dude, I'm a college dropout. I grew up dirt poor. So I honestly think that's a benefit, or like the immigrants, right? That they come here with nothing. It's a benefit. It really, really is. But go back to the old employee. I looked at her again. I said, look, you're a crack addict. She goes, what are you talking about? I said, until you hit rock bottom and you decide, like you said, Gino, until you decide, I'm done. I got to change. You're not going to change. I can make everything available to you. I can personally be your mentor. But until you're ready, you're not going to do anything about it. So,
that's right. Anyway.
She's not going. She's not going to. I've talked to enough people like that and had these same conversations. Yeah. Nothing's happening right there. Wants and
it's,
to do it.
It's frustrating, Jake, isn't it?
Because it comes down to work.
Yes.
She's not going to do the work.
Right. Yes. I agree.
Sorry. Sorry. Well, no, but it's like, you know, we're at a point now, Gina, we could coast if we wanted to, we could take it easy. The last, you know, we're kind of at this inflection point where our business has grown a lot over the last few months. And I've been putting in 80 hours a week for, I don't know, the last 3 weeks. And, you know, it's kind of sucked a little bit, but I'm not going to stop or let the business falter, you know, and then we'll implement new systems and things like that and change it up. It'll get pushed back down and then it'll rise back up. But you got to be committed though. And you got to be willing to bust it. I mean, I guarantee this lady's not putting in 80-hour weeks, and she won't. I just don't see it. I've talked to enough people like that, that it's just, that's the mentality and that's what it takes. And they're not willing to put the work in. It's as simple as that.
Or she is putting in 80 hour weeks, but she's doing it for somebody else. She's too scared to go do it for herself.
Yeah, that's right.
That's a big part of it right there.
I agree.
So two big shout outs. One more to The Richest Man in Babylon, because I effing love that book.
Oh yeah.
And it's great. And we don't want to forget about Properties Czar and find out why they're quickly becoming the property management solution for portfolios of all sizes. Right now, our listeners can start a free trial with no credit card required. Just go to propertyczar.com/Gino. That's propertyzar.com/Gino. Do it. Hey, short answers, real quick.
Yeah.
Your best habit for success, something you do on a daily basis, weekly basis, that's really, you know, propelled your real estate career?
Kind of really two things, right? I'm not a miracle morning guy necessarily, because I'm not that structured or rigid, but I do have a morning routine. I always come in, I journal, I meditate first thing in the morning. I try to wake up by 6 o'clock. I go for, I'm 49 years old, so I don't run anymore, but I go for a three-mile walk minimum every morning. And then I come back, I get to work. And then the second thing is, you know, it's goofy, but I always say yes, right? I'm known to be the guy. I'll be at a party. I'll be talking to a group of two or three people, and there'll be a satellite group off to my side somewhere, and I'll hear my name. Hey, Bruce, you want to do it? Yeah. And then you go, okay, now what did I say yeah to? And that's a huge core belief for me. Just say yes. Now, I can always back out of it if I don't want to, you know, jump out of a plane without a parachute. I can decide, well, okay, I reconsider. But I say yes to everything and then figure it out. I never give up, and I just keep pushing forward.
Sounds like a pretty good miracle morning to me. I mean, that's not bad. 6 o'clock with some meditation and doing it.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, so it's not by the book necessarily from Hal, but I've got my own version of it, and it works great for me.
What is the biggest mistake you've made multifamily?
Oh, biggest mistake I made, I would say probably, it was on my first deal because I didn't know any better is what it was. It was just uneducated. But, I didn't know all the things to look for when I was doing my due diligence. I thought I did. And I did everything that I was taught, but either the person that was teaching me had never encountered it, or they had not thought to tell me about it. So I didn't look closely at the bathtub, and that bit me square in the ass.
What happened?
Okay, so 1984 construction, they were built with plastic or fiberglass bathtubs. And plastic or fiberglass bathtubs, when you step in them, there's a little bit of flex. There's a little bit of give in these apartment complexes. So 30, 35 years down the road, they start to crack. And I was sitting in the office of my first purchase, and the office being shut down by the manager. I'm sitting there talking with her, and one of our residents comes screaming in just in a panic, and we just flip out and go running back to her apartment with her. Well, what happened? She was downstairs. She was standing at her vanity, looking at herself in the mirror, combing her hair or whatever she was doing, and the ceiling above her head collapsed. And oh, yeah, exactly. She got doused with water. We went running upstairs to figure out what was going on. And we talked to the person up there. And they said, oh, yeah, we got a hole in the bathtub. They had a hole in their bathtub the size of a quarter. It's like, what? Why didn't you say anything? Oh, it's no big deal. I just put my toe in it. What? So what you learn in C properties, working class properties, they don't want to say anything. They don't want to be a bother a lot of times. And they just won't tell you when they have a problem. They'll just tough it out. I was like, no, I need to know. That turned out to be about a $1,500 problem when it should have been a $100 to $200 fix. So that was my biggest mistake. It was only because I didn't know to check bathtubs. I'm looking for steel or make sure they're in good shape.
And you touch on something critical to see tenants. They are not used to being serviced. They're used to being taken advantage of. And if you can offer them customer service and you can go into the apartment every 6 months, be proactive, smoke detectors, HVAC filters, go in there and take a look and see what's going on and make sure that you service them, then you'll expect it and it'll cut down your deferred maintenance. Because I have the same thing. I had a restaurant. I had three tenants upstairs. I'm at the property. I used to be at the property every day. These guys would wait till something blew up or something leaked into the restaurant. I'm like, guys, why don't you say something? And it's mind-boggling to me, but they don't expect that level of service because they're the forgotten people. Unfortunately, that's how it goes. And if you're there and you can run a tight ship and you can offer that customer service, it's amazing what you'll do. You'll retain them. You'll be able to charge premiums because you're offering them a quality service, and it goes a long way to retaining those tenants.
Right. So on that, I know these are supposed to be quick answers, but you got me on this one. So
no, man,
all my staff, remember I'm the property management company, right? So all my staff, they hear all the time ad nauseum. I wear them out with this empathy, 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 empathy. That is my number one word for my management company. You have to understand, employees, my guys, this is a business for you and a job for you. This is their freaking home. This is where they live and raise their kids and cook their Thanksgiving dinner, right? You have to always remember that. You are here for them. They're not here for you. If they're not here, we don't have a business. You do what you can within reason to take care of them. If you don't feel you were taken advantage of by somebody at least once a week, you're not doing your job. Take care of these people. Treat them with dignity, humility, and respect. And Gino, like you said, they won't leave because everybody else treats them like dog shit because they don't make a lot of money and they have no option to live anywhere else nicer. So it takes usually 6 months to a year to retrain a tenant base when we take over that. I swear to God, guys, we're here for you. We want to help you. You got to let us know what's going on. So we start throwing lots of parties, lots of events, and just we win them over slowly. But it's a long process.
I love it all, guys. I love it all. I always, the other thing, when we're kind of working with our staff, I always tell them you have to serve the business so the business can serve you. If you want more out of this business, serve the business, meaning take care of the tenants, do the right thing, and it'll come back to serve you. It's they go hand in hand. And that's the mindset that you got to get into these guys. And I'm so on board with all this.
Yeah.
Book recommendation.
The basic stuff, right? Rich Dad, Poor Dad. That's so fundamental. I mean, I love Richest Man in Babylon, but that is very, very, very elementary for a broken person financially, a Dave Ramsey kind of guy. But if you're getting a little out of that, then it's got to be Rich Dad Poor Dad. And again, I'm a big fanboy, I guess, but anything Gary Vaynerchuk does.
Cool. Do you read the new book? I saw he's got a new one out.
Crushing it. I don't think it's released yet. Either that or it's going to release this week, maybe.
That's how good of a marketer this guy is. I think he's got a book out already. It's not even out yet.
Well, it might be. I don't think it is, but y'all definitely get it once it's out if it's not out already.
What project are you excited about right now?
Oh, I'm looking at a large, well, you know, don't want to divulge too much here because I'm looking at it right now. But I'm looking at a very large multifamily project in San Antonio that is going to have, I've actually found something that needs a lot of rehab. You know, $2.5 million worth of rehab that I think I can reposition. And I might have kind of like a blended thing between a fully stabilized asset and a deep value add. So I'm crazy excited about that because it's that, you know, bringing back a jewel from a pile of crap, right? That's the fun stuff. So that's the one I'm most interested in right now.
How can listeners get a hold of you?
My website, apt-guy.com. So I am the apartment guy, basically, apt-guy.com. And on there, you can click the invest button if you're interested there. We've got all of our social media buttons there. So that's the best way to get a hold of me.
Very cool. G-Dad, what you got?
I'm not reading anymore, Jake. Okay.
You're done reading today. No, you're off the hook. You're off the hook.
I got a lot of great tips on syndication. I think it's keep it simple, right? Make it tasty, whatever it is. I think that's the strategy to go, especially on your first syndication. And as you get bigger, if you want to take more of the deal, I guess that's okay. But I think we're going to follow this strategy. I've been struggling with it. I had a great time in the call. I think this is a lot of knowledge. I like the love value add, and he's the mom and pop in Austin, right, Jake? I mean, it's basically the
same. I just love talking to somebody else that's running their own property management company. Everyone else we talk to is kind of just on the buy or syndication side. This was refreshing for me, so I really appreciated that.
It was great.
Yeah, it's too much work, but you know what? I wouldn't give it up. It's the most fun thing that I do. It really is. I love working with my staff.
Yep, me too.
That's great. Totally agree. Well, Bruce, thanks again for being on the show. We really appreciate it, and we will speak to you soon.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot for having me. Had a ball.
Thanks.
Same here. Thanks, Bruce.
All right, later, guys.
We trust that you enjoy the Wheelbarrow Profits podcast. Visit jakeandgino.com, your one-stop shop for everything multifamily. See you next time when Jake and Gino share more of their investing secrets with you.